RadioInfluence.com.
Why, Crusher, it's good to see you.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
And welcome to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Crushell here, the con man behind the glass, keeping us on track. And we're your weekly source for performance information. If you have any questions, comments, smart remarks, as usual, get to us. We love them all, and we answer every message that we get. CrushPerformance.com is the website. You can sign up for our newsletter, subscribe to the podcast, or just drop us a line. Info at CrushPerformance is the email. On Twitter, at Jeff Crush, and on all other social media platforms, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook, search out Crush Performance. Well, a really, really important show today, and I've been waiting for this one as the first month of Major League Baseball is under our belts. We're going to look back on the start of the season to see what's going on, what we can learn from this first month. Baseball is in a very, very interesting spot right now. But even more importantly, we're going to talk with our good friend Jamie Reed, the Senior Director of Medical Operations for the Texas Rangers, about what's going on in developmental sport. Baseball will be our theme today, but make no mistake, the information and the trends and the thoughts here really do have implications that go well beyond the game of baseball. We're talking about long-term athlete development, reducing risk of injuries, and improving athletes' health, and helping athletes reach their potential. Because if we look at the reasons why athletes are dropping out of sport or never get to the point where they reach their true potential, one of the leading reasons is injuries. Injuries is one of the top reasons athletes never reach their playing potential, regardless of the sport they're in. It just so happens that throwing a baseball is incredibly challenging. And at one time, I called it the most dangerous movement in all of sport. I'm going to throw that at Jamie today, but I don't want to discourage anybody from playing baseball. That's not the case at all. Let's put it this way. Throwing a baseball is one of the most complex movements in all of sport, especially if you're a pitcher, time and time again. We know that a catcher throws more than anybody, and the stresses from the infield and certainly the outfield are great, but for pitchers, it's a different ball game, no pun intended. So to say that it's one of the most complex movements in all of sport is certainly true, and mismanaged, throwing a baseball does indeed become one of the most dangerous movements in all of sport. We're going to explain why later in the show. We'll also talk with Jamie about what are the top priorities for staying healthy. If you're on the start of your career, if you're specializing in a sport, if you're specializing in the game of baseball, what are the top priorities? We're going to look at what some of the experts are saying there. And why is specialization in sport, and certainly in baseball, a very risky move? With the greatest of intentions, you know, we put our young athletes all into a sport. But could it be setting them back? We're going to talk about that. And we're also going to talk about the dangers for baseball players, regardless of your position. And in case you didn't know it, the Texas Rangers are building a brand new covered stadium down in Texas. It is going to be state of the art. This is going to be one of the crown jewels of baseball, I think. But more importantly, as we have Jamie on the phone here, I can't let him get away without asking him about the new turf that they're going to install there. It was originally supposed to be a grass surface, but they've gone to turf. Jamie sort of spearheaded that movement and looking into all the science and the pros and cons of grass versus turf and vice versa. We definitely have to ask him about that while we have him on the line. And we're going to discuss a very important concept. Could where you live impact your development and your risk of injury? I think you're going to be surprised at the answer here and how powerful your location is when it comes to your development and how it's influencing you. There's a lot to be learned here for every sport. That's coming up with Jamie Reed right after the break. But right now, we are well into the second month of Major League Baseball, and the first one was a doozy. Let's look at the standings. The first month really wasn't a case of the usual suspects. As a matter of fact, there were some big surprises. And when we look at the standings across the league, I think the two biggest surprises were Seattle Mariners and the Tampa Rays. I mean, if you look at the AL East, that is an interesting, always an interesting division, let's just face it. But I have Boston here to really, really dominate not just that division, but the entire league. hasn't quite gone that way. I'm not going to lie here. I'm just a little surprised. Of course, Kevin Cash and the guys at the Tampa Rays are doing a fantastic job. You know, one of the lower payroll teams in the league. I love it when the small market, low payroll teams do really well, but it's not helping their fan base. I mean, I think everybody realizes that at the end of the day, all things will be as they should be. Boston and New York are going to be battling there, and Toronto, Tampa, and Baltimore, well, they're going to probably wind up where they should be, and I think we all kind of know where that is. But if Tampa can hold on here, it's going to be a very interesting season. I just don't see it happening. The Seattle Mariners came out of the chute just all guns blazing, and they were strong through the first month. They dominated. They're starting to slip a little now. Again, all things are as they should be. I think the Minnesota Twins there are a powerhouse, and rightfully so. The Twins have been making some strategic moves, not just internally as an organization, but also in terms of the players they've added in there. So I'm always interested to see how the moves impact overall performance, and it's really cool to get an inside look in some of these organizations to see how they're using their developmental levels to bolster big league performance. And I think there's a couple teams that are doing a fantastic job here. If we get into the National League, looking at the East, the Philadelphia Phillies are one of them. Now, they haven't been really, really noted for their minor league development, but they've done a really good job lately of acquiring great young talent in their minor leagues. And of course, their commitment to Harper has changed the entire environment there. So it's interesting to see the power of one player and also the commitment of an organization and how it can influence what happens. Right now, they're strong. They're really strong. It's a tight race. Of course, Atlanta, though they have some injuries right now, they have been noted for their minor league development system and their ability to develop players from within and either use them to trade to bring in big league talent or to develop those players to play in the big leagues for the organization. And that's the dream. I mean, as a GM or even as a player, to get into an organization, come up through that organization, and play for that organization. Unfortunately, it just doesn't happen a lot in this day and age. Chicago Cubs, St. Louis are going to be there. Milwaukee's an interesting team to watch. Pittsburgh and Cincinnati, I think, are right where they should be. But the Dodgers are always interesting to watch. And last year, we talked about the Arizona Diamondbacks being ahead of schedule in terms of their rebuild. They weren't just ahead of schedule. They dominated last year, and they're on track this year again to be really competitive. So a lot of interesting storylines when it comes to the standings at this point, but don't be alarmed. At the end of the day in Major League Baseball, here's one thing I've come to learn. All will be as it should be. So I guess part of the fun of being a fan of a sport is just, yes, maybe watching your team and your players for sure, but watching how the whole league unwinds over the course of a competitive season. Of course, baseball with so many games and such a tight schedule, it's really, really fun to watch. But there are some other storylines that kind of coincide with the standings. And it's interesting if we look at the attendance issues that Major League Baseball is now facing. Attendance in 2018 was down 4% overall, which might not be too alarming. 4%, I think, is an acceptable drop, especially when you have up and down years. But if you remember at the start of the 2018 season, the weather was atrocious. The number of postponements and cancellations were incredible. I think it was the highest in recorded history in baseball. So a lot of makeup games later in the year that people just didn't get out to. So they lost a lot of, I think, steam right at the very beginning. This year's a little different. We haven't had the terrible, terrible weather. Haven't seen as many postponements or cancellations to this point, but attendance is down. And attendance is down not just a little bit. Attendance is down a lot in some markets. In fact, over the first month, 12 of the 30 teams are down in attendance. For example, the Toronto Blue Jays from this time last year are down 33%. Again, they had the largest drop in attendance last year overall in Major League Baseball. Once again, they have the largest drop in the first month. They're down 33% from last year, which is crazy. The Minnesota Twins is an interesting one because they're actually competing quite well, but they're down 18% from the same time over last year, which doesn't make a lot of sense to me other than the fact they have that outdoor stadium in a pretty cold climate. So we'll see what happens over the next 2 or 3 months here. San Francisco Giants are down. Well, and I think that's rightfully so, even though they made some pretty exciting moves in the offseason. They're down 17%. The Marlins, who are basically out of contention at spring training, they're down 16%. The Kansas City Royals, who's one of our favorite organizations, is also down 15% over last year. 12 teams down in attendance. And I think that's concerning. You know, they've made all those rule changes to hopefully stir up the interest and keep it more attractive for the fans, with attempts to, you know, increase the pace of play and shorten the length of the games. All great moves, but it doesn't seem to be impacting the fans' attitudes here. But if you look at the teams who are down in attendance, it's the teams who really haven't been making a move to be competitive. And what can you expect? Who wants to go out and watch a team that's not competitive? And just before we cut out for a break here, here's a great example. Let's look at what's happening in Philadelphia. Philadelphia is up 44% from last year. And the big move? Of course, they signed Harper. So I think as much as fans want to win, they want to see a winning team, sometimes you just have to make an effort to be competitive. Sometimes that's all a fan base wants. I think everybody understands the ebb and flow of the competitive nature of sport. You're going to have good years and down years, but you should always strive to be competitive. And I think that's one of the issues the Players Association is pointing out with the owners, is that some of these teams just aren't making an effort, especially when you look at the free agency market. There's great free agents still available that could help any team out there. So interesting times in baseball. All right, we got to cut out for a break. But when we come back, I've been waiting for this conversation. We'll be joined by Jamie Reed, Senior Director of Medical Operations for the Texas Rangers, as we tackle the injury rates in baseball and what it means not just for baseball, but for all of developmental sports. Some very, very important stuff coming up right after this on Crush Performance.
If you have any performance questions, comments, or smart remarks, text Crusher at 101260 and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
And welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Crushell here. Listen, if you want to get in touch with us with your questions, comments, or smart remarks, or again, if you have a topic or an idea you'd like us to investigate and look into, please let us know. We may dedicate a segment or an entire episode to your idea. And we answer every single message that we get. So reach out to us. CrushPerformance.com is the website. Info at CrushPerformance is the email. Follow me on Twitter at Jeff Crush. And on social media, just search out Crush Performance. Instagram, Facebook, and our cool YouTube channel. Much, much more to come on each one of those platforms. So today, listen, we are going to have a very, very serious conversation. And I don't want to pigeonhole this just as a baseball conversation, though that will be the theme. There is meaning and information inside of today's conversation that go well beyond the sport of baseball. We're talking about youth sport and athlete development, athlete health, and injury prevention. It just so happens that we're looking at the first month of baseball, but we're also tracking back and looking at the trends of what's happening in baseball. Much like we follow the NFL and hockey for concussion information and concussion trends, we see it spinning off into games like rugby and soccer and the combative sports. The information we get from every sport has meaning in the sporting community. Today, however, we're going to have a serious conversation about a major problem in baseball, and that's injuries. We are at a tipping point, in my humble opinion. The number of injuries that we're seeing, not just at the professional level, but at the developmental levels, and probably most concerning, what we're seeing down in the grassroots level, is very concerning. Sport should be fun. Kids should be enjoying it, not getting hurt. Again, it goes back to my question. If I were to say we're destroying more talent than we're creating, how would you react to that? Let us know. That's the text question of the day. How do you react to me saying that? You can email us, get us on Twitter, and also on the text line 101260. Well, to help us with this conversation, I am very happy to introduce Jamie Reed, who's the Senior Director of Medical Operations for the Texas Rangers. Jamie, thanks so much for coming on the show at this very busy time.
No, it's my pleasure, Jeff. Looking forward to it.
Great. Well, since we met up a few weeks ago, I've been really interested to talk to you about some of the things we're facing in baseball. But you're entering your 17th year with the Rangers, your 38th year in professional baseball. Jamie Reed, let me ask you this, my good friend. How has the game changed over the years? I mean, the things you have seen as we step into this new baseball season, I can't even imagine.
Yeah, so my first year in the major leagues was 1989 with the Baltimore Orioles, and I'd been in the Orioles minor league system for 7 years. So if you can imagine this, 1989, we did not have a weight room in the major league stadium. We did not have a strength coach. We did not have supplements. We did not have food, nutrition experts, none of that. And now, honestly, all of those drive the clubhouse. So that's been a big radical change.
It sure has. And we look at the state of the players and where they're at in terms of their physical prowess. The classic image of a baseball player has changed greatly, even over the last decade, leave alone the last 30-plus years.
Yeah, for sure. I'm 5'10 and 175, and honestly, I was a little bit smaller than most of the players, but now players tower over top of me. It's a big man's game now.
Yeah, it certainly is. Jamie, I think a couple of things that we've really seen change over the years. One is the facilities. I'd like to talk to you more about this later, but you kind of mentioned it already, the weight rooms, the sports science. We have nap rooms. We have doping rooms. The facilities in general in terms of the ballparks and the playing fields have changed dramatically. I'll talk to you about that later. But also, this whole idea of player development, Jamie, and I kind of want to start here because this is sort of a really important part of what we're trying to accomplish here in baseball and on a big picture is to better understand player development and the long-term approach. So, Jamie, in your experiences through your time in baseball, let's just go back to those early years and talk about players coming into professional baseball and where they're at compared to where they are today, if that makes sense.
Sure, absolutely. I can remember in 1988, I was actually my last year in AAA with the Orioles, but our major league team started the year 0-21. Which was a tough year. It was actually a good year not to be there in Baltimore. But that gave us the first round pick, the first pick in the draft in 1989. And we drafted Ben McDonald out of LSU. And at that time, Ben was throwing 90 to 92 miles an hour, and that was almost unheard of velocities. We don't really even look at pitchers until the second half of the draft now, and unless they're throwing 93 to 95 fairly consistently. So velo is definitely driving the game. There's certainly been some studies that suggest that shorter players are probably more injury prone. So we're drafting taller players. And we used to, I remember getting around an old scouting director, and his favorite player to draft was a kid from the northern half of the United States or Canada who played up the middle of the field. So he was either catcher, second base, shortstop, or center fielder who started pitch late in his amateur career because he felt they had the best chance of staying healthy.
Interesting stuff. We're talking with Jamie Reed, the Senior Director of Medical Operations for the Texas Rangers. Isn't it crazy how things have changed over the years? If we look at the developmental levels of baseball, we're talking minor league baseball, before pro even, the amount of emphasis on strength and conditioning and the overemphasis, I believe, on velocity that we're seeing now and the development of velocity. And then we have all these different routes. We have the independent leagues, which have kind of been around always, but we have this great college system now. And of course, baseball is like no other sport, where you have levels of development and time to develop your players. The emphasis on player development nowadays, Jamie, is almost overwhelming. I'm fascinated by it, especially with the influx of sports science. But despite everything that we know and that we're doing, when we look at the injury rates, and particularly let's look at professional baseball, we really aren't going in the right direction, are we? It's unbelievable to me, Jamie.
Yeah, it really is. And, a shoulder injury, rotator cuff or labrum, can be a death sentence, quite honestly. My good friend, Dr. James Andrews, said the last thing you ever want to do is have your shoulder operated on. And I think back in the early 90s, we got really good with shoulder prehab exercises, concentrically and eccentrically, and shoulder injuries subsequently have gone way, way down, which has been great. But what has really risen are the elbow injuries, specifically the anterolateral ligament. And, you know, with the shoulder, you're talking about dynamic stabilizers. So we can work the rotator cuff, the lat, the bicep, the tricep, pec minor, all the muscles that are very important in pitching and specifically velocity. But the static stabilizers, like the anterolateral ligament and the labrum in the shoulder, you can't make stronger. So ideally, you keep everything strong, and those secondary joint stabilizers don't wear the brunt. But the reality of it is, as velo has driven upwards, you just can't protect specifically the anterolateral ligament, a static stabilizer, nearly as well as we did when the guys weren't throwing as hard. So, I mean, the injury trends are crazy. Just, you know, in minor league baseball, from 2005 to 2009, in the amateur draft, there were 97 pitchers drafted that had a TJ. It was about 19 guys per draft. In 2010 to 2015, that number more than doubled to 38. And I've been very, very involved in our draft and doing medical risk assessment on the top 500 to 600 guys in the draft. And quite honestly, we're averaging the last 5 years, I'm seeing anywhere from 50 to 110 Tommy Johns in the draft. So these guys are getting hurt early, and it's a big factor. I remember talking to three people specifically when I really started digging into this. One of them was the great orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Lou Yocum, God bless his soul, was the head team physician for the Anaheim Angels, LA Angels, for years and years. And he was kind of like, almost like the American League team physician. You would hold injuries for Dr. Yocum to take a look at him. And I asked him, I said, what's the best way to protect the shoulder and elbow? And he thought about it, and he said, you know what, I think it's a good core program. And we certainly instituted big core programs, as you know, back in the 90s. That became a major point of emphasis. I then asked Nolan Ryan, who at the time was our team president here in Texas and a Hall of Fame pitcher, pitched until he was 44 years old. You know, what's the best way to protect your shoulder and elbow to get through a career, a professional career? And he said lower body strength. He was a big believer in lower body strength. He's kind of like the father of strength and conditioning in Major League Baseball. Mm-hmm. And then I asked Dr. Keith Meister, who's our team physician, trained under Dr. Andrews, honestly is like the go-to guy for elbow and shoulder injuries in baseball now. Second opinions to probably 15 different teams. And I asked him, and he thought about it and thought about it, and he said, you know what? You need to start your career healthy. And that goes back to amateur baseball. That's really, we're inheriting problems at the professional level from wears and tears that happen in amateur ball.
Oh, Jamie Reed, the Senior Director of Medical Operations for the Texas Rangers, you have just tugged on my heartstrings, my good friend, because I agree with you 100%. These problems we're seeing in professional baseball are inherited, and what that means for all of our listeners is it's happening at a younger age. And Jamie, if we look at the data, it's happening at younger and younger ages. The numbers you just talked about in terms of the pro draft, that's alarming enough. But when we talk about some of the lower levels of baseball where there's no medical specialists, where there's volunteer moms and dads coaching, there's really no, I guess, understanding of managing the intensity and volume of throwing. And not only that, Jamie, this idea of specialization has really, really influenced the development of young athletes, and not in a good way, in my opinion.
No, I totally agree. You know, just to another point in case of these young guys who are getting drafted with issues, from 2005 to 2009, there are roughly 28 Tommy Johns per season. And the next 6 years, 2010 to 2015, there were 110. So that more than quadrupled in a five-year period. So it definitely are these younger guys coming in with some wear and tear, and they just can't keep it together as they go from pitching, you know, once a week or twice a week in amateur ball to every fifth day. College pitchers typically are once a week. They're Friday night or Saturday night or Sunday afternoon pitchers typically, and now they're going every fifth day. And they're just not holding up. But they're not holding up because, you know, there's so much tread on the tire. And if you burn that out, that tread out as an amateur, it's going to impact your professional career for sure.
Oh, I like that analogy, tread on the tire. That is something that everybody can understand, especially at the developmental levels. Man, if you're burning that tread early, you're really lowering the potential, the end potential of that young player. And it starts early, doesn't it, Jamie? You know, I think we're in a paradox here. Jamie, we've got a big, big problem. And I think baseball collectively somehow... we've got to get together, like as a community, to really start solving this problem. This push for velocity, I believe, has a lot to do with the issues we're seeing. I mean, if we look at Jordan Hicks right now, St. Louis, he is the hardest throwing pitcher in baseball right now. The other day, you know, he's 22 years old. He was clocked throwing a sinker at 104.2 miles an hour. So the velocities are creeping up. But as you mentioned, you know, we look at the velocities for our high school drafted entry draft players. It's on the rise as well. But the push for velocity at the developmental levels, oh boy, I think it's happening way too soon. Would I be safe to say, and maybe I'm going a little bit overboard here, but when it comes to this and the push for velocity, could we be destroying more talent than we're creating, Jamie, because we just don't understand the long-term implications of what we're doing? Does that make sense in any way?
Yeah, I think it makes perfect sense. And, you know, I asked the question in the draft room each of the last 5 years, how come we don't look at or draft pitchers who have pitchability? And what I mean by that is maybe lower velocity, but they know how to get batters out. And that should play at every level. But, you know, the velo is driven. You know, if you go to a high school or college game, you'll see, you know, you can see 30 scouts there, and every one of them is holding up a radar gun. So they're measuring velocity, and the higher the velocity, the more they click up. Another problem are these showcases that happen, you know, around the States, and I assume in Canada also.
Yeah.
And it's basically, it's velo driven. It's all about your baseball tools. It's not your ability to play the game or win at the game. It's showcasing your tools. And one of the big tools now, it's easy to scout, is velocity, because, you know, it's kind of subjective when you watch a guy's hands in the infield, how well he handles the glove, handles, you know, bad hops or whatever else. But it's easy to measure velocity with a radar gun. So that's certainly where we've gone. And, you know, there's so much to this. The specialization, certainly. Dr. Mike Sicotti, who takes care of the Philadelphia Phillies, did a really interesting study about 3 years ago. And he basically polled about 3,000 baseball players, and many from high school who topped out in high school, many who topped out in college, and you know, 1,300 major league players. And the question was asked, when did you start specializing in baseball? And interestingly, you know, the guys who topped out in high school started specializing in baseball at age 12. The guys who topped out in college, about 13 and a half. The major league players, most of those guys did not specialize until between 15 and a half and 16. So maybe something to, A, they played another sport, they took the wear and tear off the shoulder and elbow, maybe they became a better athlete because they're playing soccer or football or basketball, whatever else. But they certainly protected themselves, and I think that's really, really very important in the specialization. You know, in the NFL, the National Football League, last year, the draft is this weekend for the NFL, but last year's draft, of the 32 number one picks, 29 of them played multiple sports in high school. So there's real value across the board with all sports, but for the overhand thrower, it's really, really big.
We're talking with Jamie Reed, the Senior Director of Medical Operations for the Texas Rangers. Jamie, just a fantastic conversation here, and one of the things that we push on our show for the last 20 years, or as long as we've been on the air now, is this idea of the dangers of specialization. Hey, I want to throw this by you, because with the baseball season starting across the board up here, of course, it's been going down south in some places year-round. It's starting to open up here in the northern climates. I just did a post the other day because, you know, just really, really, really concerned about the developmental levels. Just trying to share information. I might have stepped out of bounds here, but I was really interested to get your opinion on this. So I said throwing a baseball might be one of the most dangerous movements in all of sport. And I don't want to scare people away from the game of baseball. So I think I might want to rephrase that as maybe it's one of the most complex movements in all of sport. And when it's mismanaged, it can be incredibly dangerous. Does that make better sense to you?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. I think, you know, two unique things happen in the sport of baseball. A lot of people feel that the hardest athletic thing to do is hit a round ball with a round bat that's going at maximum velocity and changing directions. But I agree with you. The most dangerous thing for a sport-specific athlete is an overhead thrower, for sure.
Yep, I agree. And especially when it's mismanaged now, you know, we have these two very important factors that we have to consider at every single level of the game. And that's the intensity that an athlete throws, regardless of their age. It should be sort of in relationship to maybe their age average velocity. So if an average velocity for a 13-year-old, let's say, is 50 miles an hour, if your 13-year-old, for some reason, is maybe a little more mature or is growing quickly or is further along their growth development curve, and they're throwing 62 miles an hour, the pitch counts don't really work there, because that 62 miles an hour is more stressful than the age average of 50. So we have to also consider this idea of intensity. Unfortunately, the hardest throwing players are the ones that are used the most, Jamie, because they're the ones that get results.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, I've taken the position for a long time that Major League Baseball needs to look back, and to protect the industry, we need to start coaching the amateur coaches, as you referenced before. A lot of times it's a dad who's volunteering time, and he's not supposed to be, you know, a great pitching coach and understand mechanics. That's our responsibility to do it. But, you know, we talked about this when you came to spring training. What really got me interested in this was an article in Sports Illustrated. It was actually just two pictures, and it had to have been 10 or 12 years ago. And it was basically a diagram of the Caribbean, United States, and Canada. And the first picture was just, it was a circle, and the bigger the circle, the more home runs. So it was the production and home run hitters that have had careers in Major League Baseball. And probably not surprisingly, about 65% of them were the southern half of the states and the Caribbean, because they could play more baseball because of the weather. The next picture was Major League pitchers who had at least 200 wins. and 78% of them are in the cold weather states. And that's when I started coining the term. These kids were weather protected. They couldn't play baseball when it was cold outside and wet and snowy and all those things. They were forced inside or forced to a soccer field, and they were actually protected from the year-round baseball. Interestingly, though, as I've noticed in the draft, the last couple of years specifically, some of these northern big-town cities were having these baseball warehouses are starting to see a tick up in Tommy John and ulnar collateral ligament issues because they're going inside and they're throwing bullpens like every Saturday or Sunday year-round, and their injury rates are going up.
Oh, Jamie Reed, a shot across the bow right there. Year-round sport can be a dangerous, dangerous game to play, and I absolutely love the term weather-protected athletes. Listen, everybody, we got to cut out for a quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue the discussion on the idea that where you live can impact not just your development, but your risk of injuries, and we'll get into throwing athletes and how we can move forward to keep our athletes safe. Stick around. More to come with Jamie Reed of the Texas Rangers on Crush Performance right after this.
You're listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
Hey, welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Gershell here, the con man behind the glass. Today, a very, very important conversation as we talk with Jamie Reed, the Senior Director of Medical Operations for the Texas Rangers, about injuries, preventing injuries, and what needs to change in the game of baseball. And again, the conversation today goes well, well beyond baseball. I think there's things to reflect in this conversation that can be applied or at least linked to every single other sport out there. Injuries are a serious issue across the board, and anytime we can look at strategies and methods for improving player health, we're all in. And that takes us to our question of the day. With all this specialization, year-round training, and stress that we're putting on our young athletes, what if I said we're destroying more talent than we're creating at this point in time? What would you say? How do you respond to that? Am I right? Am I off my rocker? How could I possibly say it? How do I justify it? Well, I think a lot of the reasoning is in this conversation with Jamie today. But get to us. Crushperformance.com is the website. You can send us an email, info@crushperformance, on Twitter, @JeffCrush, and on all other social media platforms. Search out Crush Performance, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Again, the question, what if I said we're destroying more talent than we're creating? Well, Jamie, you just gave us a shot across the bow, and I actually love this term. The first time you said it when we were down in spring training, I had to take a step back and think about it, and I'm not going to lie to you, I lost a little sleep over it. It's a great, great perspective on what's going on out there, and I hadn't really considered the implications of where we live in terms of climate and how it influences what we do. But the impact it has, not just on our development and how we go about developing our athletes, but on our performance and the injury rates, well, now that's a fascinating thing, and it's also something to learn from. And I also think it's very sad to hear that all the pressure we're putting on our young athletes and our sporting families, for that matter, we're starting to see those northern weather-protected athletes in jeopardy because of year-round indoor facilities. It's a big concern, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, at some point, you can blame the coaches on pitch counts, but at some point, you have to blame the parents who are allowing their child to specialize. They're putting them in these year-round baseball factories, thinking they're going to enhance their chances of making the major league. They're probably decreasing their chances, quite honestly, and spending a lot of money doing it. But, you know, you made a point a couple of minutes ago about pitch counts. And I really, like, dug into this deep about 8 years ago after that Sports Illustrated article. Mm-hmm. And one of the popular things that pops up on the TVs and in the major league clubhouses and the athletic training rooms are when the Little League World Series starts up in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. And just a little historical point, the Little League World Series actually started in 1947 after the end of World War II, and a lot of dads came back and started coaching their kids, and they decided to have a kind of a worldwide tournament to get all the best 12-year-olds in the country and in the world together and see who is truly, you know, the Little League World Series champ. And interestingly, these are the best 12-year-olds in the world. I think the number is like 47,000 of the best 12-year-olds in the world have gone through Williamsport since 1947. Only five of the best 12-year-old pitchers in the world have actually pitched in in the major leagues. That's a really, really small alumni group. But we also go to pitch counts. And at one point, the pitch count was 12 times their age. So a 12-year-old could throw 120 pitches in a little league game, and that was considered okay. You know, Dr. Anders and USA Baseball kind of lowered the numbers to 7 times their age. But still, 7 times 12 is 84 pitches, which is a lot for a skeletally immature, not specifically trained young pitcher. And I will tell you, at the major league level, I've got skeletally mature, highly trained, highly skilled pitchers. And at 84 pitchers, we're getting the bullpen ready because this guy's getting near the end of the rope. So pitch counts are a really big thing. I think the pitchers need to keep track of them because a lot of parents have their kids playing on multiple teams. And at that point, it's not the coach's responsibility. It's more the pitcher's, the parent's responsibility. So, you know, log it, keep track of it, have a goal of we're only throwing this many pitches through a week. We're only throwing this many innings through a season, and we're going to have some shutdown period.
Yeah, Jamie Reed, the Senior Director of Medical Operations for the Texas Rangers, joining us. An incredibly important conversation, Jamie, and that is some sage advice right there. Because just like the young volunteer coaches might not know, they're not expected to be pitching coaches. We can't expect the parents to know either, but common sense has to prevail here, Jamie. And I like the idea of a logbook. There's great resources out there. The PitchSmart program, MLB, Baseball USA, has some guidelines there that you can go into. You can Google pitch counts. You can also reach out to your local college teams or even pro guys, and there's information available. I think the common sense has to prevail here, Jamie. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem like it is to this point.
No, it really hasn't. And again, it's the thinking that more is always better. And in baseball, more is absolutely not better. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, agreed. Especially when it comes to volume and intensity, which is velocity and number of pitches for sure. Jamie, great conversation today. Listen, very exciting time with the Texas Rangers as well. A lot of new faces around that organization, a new approach. We're very, very excited. But one thing I wanted to get to here before we let you go is the new stadium. I'm actually really, really excited about this, Jamie, and maybe more so than anything else. Another day we'll talk about the sports science approach because I think that's going to be a fascinating adventure for everybody there. But I wanted to talk to you about the playing surface, the turf, because I think you guys are really helping push the artificial turf industry to the next level, and you were a big part of this. Maybe we could talk about some of the initiatives you have there with the new stadium.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you spend any time in or around Dallas, Texas in the summertime, you know it's crazy hot. And you know, from a fan perspective, we'll have big series in August, July and August, and we'll have, you know, 35,000 people come out on a Thursday night. We'll be sold out Friday and Saturday. But for the Sunday afternoon game, you know, the attendance probably drops by 50 to 75%. And I get it. It's just not really hot and sticky. So as we build our new stadium across the street, which we'll be moving into for the 2020 season next April, we're going to do a retractable roof. And the idea there is obviously to keep players and fans much more comfortable throughout the summer season. But if you've traveled around, you've been fortunate enough to go to many of the other retractable roof stadiums, in Major League Baseball, and there are four of them, you will see that it's not necessarily a great playing field because of the way the structure is designed. It's higher walls, and these retractable roofs don't allow full sunlight for the entire field. And, you know, I'm not a grass expert, but all the grass experts tell me that, you know, Bermuda or any of the other playing surfaces need at least 6 hours of sunlight and ideally 8 hours of sunlight. And there are areas, even in our stadium without a roof, they get 4 hours or less of sunlight, and it becomes, you know, almost an unsafe playing field, very tricky hops. The players cut on it because the root system is not developed for lack of sunshine. It's just not healthy. So we had the discussion probably in November of 2017, should we at least explore artificial turf for our new stadium? And I took the initiative to say, I'm going to jump into any studies I can find just from a safety standpoint, because I was a head athletic trainer in Major League Baseball for a lot of years. And when we would go to Toronto or we would go to Tampa Bay, artificial surfaces, you know, my guys would anecdotally have, you know, stiff backs, sore hamstrings, achy patellar tendon after playing on it. And a couple of things actually came of that. First one, I woke up in the middle of the night and thinking, you know, Adrian Beltre and Elvis Andrus and Rugi Odor complain about it, but wait a minute, they're spending 90% of the game standing on dirt. So this is somewhat of a dirt issue as much as it is a turf issue. But It is a turf issue. So one of the big companies, kind of the leaders in new artificial turf for sports venues, is called Shaw. Named Shaw. It's in the based out of Dalton, Georgia, and they kind of buddied up with Auburn University in Auburn, Alabama, to do a full scale artificial turf study. And their feeling was, why can't we make artificial turf that feels and acts just like a natural grass field? We should be able to do that. So a lot of studies. I've been to Auburn several times, meeting with the kinesiology department at Auburn, as well as the guys from Shaw Turf. And what they've come up with is actually a really neat infill. So infill is, the blade is, a synthetic material, and that's consistent through any artificial turf. But what the infill, like in Toronto, is mostly rubber. It's this ground-up rubber particle. And if you ever see a baseball hit it, you'll see this big splash of kind of black particles. And they're almost 100% rubber. Tampa Bay adds sand to theirs. And actually, to the point, they're over 90% sand because they want a harder, firmer field. But again, I don't think either one of them are quite ideal situations. What Shaw came up with is an organic property. And it's actually crushed up, ground up coconut shells. And it's brown. It looks like dirt. It acts like dirt. Has the same principles of dirt. And actually, in advanced testing, tests very, very similar to a natural dirt grass infield. So done a lot of studies on it. We've done some, cleat pattern studies on it. We've done impact studies on it. So Arizona actually moved ahead, and they put it in this year in Chase Field in Phoenix. There's still some growing pains. You have to water it. You don't know how much to water it. But we're going to install that field in our new artificial, our new artificial turf shawl into our new stadium. We'll be a year smarter because the D-backs are playing with it now. But I'm excited. I think in the end, I heard one of my baseball guys saying, really good turf is better than really bad grass. And that's the approach we've taken. But my goal is to see this play almost identically to a grass field without any of the physical, complaints.
Yeah, I like it, Jamie. This is really, really great for sport as well, because we see a lot of the soccer fields and also a lot of the football fields, just in terms of the environmental impact and cost as well as running a grass field. It's making more and more sense. And when we can have a better idea of the injuries and maybe reducing injuries, but also the safety for the athlete and the quality of play, that's really, really important. In my time with Toronto, the turf was in its very, very infant stages of development. And we really, really had to manage guys and over the course of a season on the old AstroTurf. And we go back to the old Montreal days, which I'm sure you've been to. That was a whole different story. It's come such a long ways, just as the facilities have.
Yeah, that was, the first generation of artificial turf, AstroTurf, was, big in St. Louis, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, and Montreal. Philadelphia, and a lot of guys felt like it was basically a carpet rolled out on concrete to shorten their careers. The second generation was, start longer blade, a little bit pad underneath. Third generation was when they started with these rubber infills, and really the Shaw turf with this organic infill is really a fifth generation, and it's completely different from anything else that most of us played with as kids or growing up working around those fields.
Yeah, great stuff. Well, very exciting times. We're watching you guys with great interest this year, Jamie. Listen, this is a very, very important discussion that we've had here today for baseball families, teams, and executives, for crying out loud, everywhere, as we try to sort of shift the trends that we're seeing, especially the developmental levels of the game in terms of injuries. Jamie, hey, thanks for all your information today. This is absolutely great stuff.
Yeah, it's great. And I'll leave you with one fact that's really, really concerning. Since 2012, the fastest growing type of orthopedic surgery in the 15 to 19 year old is Tommy John surgery. So, that's early abuse. We're taking the tread off the tire way too early. I'm going to ask you, as somebody who works in the Major League Baseball industry, please protect your child so he has a chance to, play on the fields that I manage.
Jamie Reed, great stuff. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jeff.
So there you go, everybody. Really, really important conversation. Just powerful stuff. A lot of great things to take out of this one. This is a podcast that you want to share with your friends, family, and it's one that I'm going to go back and listen to time and time again with a notebook. There's so much great information. A couple things, though. The weather-protected concept is really important. It's important for people who live in the South. It's also very important for people who live up north. And the fact that we're seeing those trends and the benefits of being weather protected slowly drift away as we shift to specialization now indoors. It is critical to have our young athletes out playing multiple sports into those mid-early teen years where then they can decide which sport they're going to go into. Again, there's very few sports where early specialization really pans out for the majority. And those are typically sports like figure skating, diving, and perhaps ballet or dance. Right? I mean, those are the early specialization sports. Other than that, we need a sampling period. We want to build well-rounded, robust athletes. And when they do decide, based on their physical abilities and also their personalities, then they'll be really set up to have some success in the sport they love. How far they go, listen, we don't know. We don't know until we get them through the process. Unfortunately, most of the young talent out there is broken well before they ever get a chance to realize their potential. And it's our fault. It's our fault. The numbers don't lie. So we've got to change it. And I'm so glad to have Jamie Reed on today. Just a fantastic discussion. I have to thank Jamie again for coming on. All right, listen, that'll do it for today. We are running out of time here. But I want to thank you guys for listening. Please share this conversation with other sporting families, teammates, and coaches that you work with or know. It's just really important. We need to talk about this stuff. You can get the podcast at crushperformance.com. Our full archives are there, so you can go back and listen to any of our shows. But this one in particular is worthy of a share, especially if you're a baseball family. But if you're involved in developmental sport, you need to take heed. This is an incredibly important conversation. Again, we have to thank Jamie Reed. Can't wait to have him on again. Just a great ambassador for sport. And again, the idea of too much tread on the tire, taking too much tread off too soon. It's a long game, ladies and gentlemen. So many great takeaways from this show. I'm glad you guys tuned in today. Coming up next week, we're going to talk a little sports vision with our good friends from Slow the Game Down, Ryan Harrison. Sport vision might be one of the most underrated, yet for me personally, one of the most impactful ways to improve your performance. Because if you haven't been in a visual training program before, you're going to get better, and it's going to be almost instantly. And if you're in a good progressive program, it can influence your performance as you develop your skills. A great conversation coming up next week with Ryan Harrison. Again, thank you all for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time on Crush Performance. Remember, we're here to help you think like an athlete.
Bye now. Don't forget to write.
Radio Influence strives to bring you excellence in podcasting. We work with personalities like TV chef Brian Duffy, radio personalities like Ian Beckles and DJ Eakin, news and political pundits like Law and Crime Network's Vincent Hill, and independent journalists Frank and Tracy Beans, experts from the sports world like veteran football scout and coach Chris Landry, pro wrestling personality David Penzer, MMA experts Jason Floyd and Daniel Galvan, and strength and conditioning coach Jeff Crochelle. If you're looking for food, sports, music, entertainment, politics, no matter the topic, Radio Influence has something for everyone. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.